The ASEAN summit has opened up in Bangkok. Now it's time for the East Asia summit there as well. It is all happening in the Thai capital. And in and around these meetings have been discussions about a new trade deal that would be the biggest in the world. Yes, forget the TPP. It's time to talk about the RCEP. Very catchy acronyms. India is still holding out, but Australia is working to keep a new 16-member regional trade agreement on track. The trip already looks like a diplomatic success for the Prime Minister, Scott Morrison, who met Chinese Premier Li Keqiang yesterday. Professor Richard McGregor is a senior fellow with the Lowy Institute. He's been closely following the developments out of Bangkok. Richard, thank you so much for joining us. We'll get to the RCEP trade deal in a moment, but first to Scott Morrison's meeting with the Chinese Premier. China said in that meeting it wants a good relationship with Australia and they'll work to improve relations. It sounds like a big shift in tone, is it?
Well, it's certainly a shift. Whether it's a big shift, we have to wait and see. There's a lot of difficulties in the Australia-China relationship, and it's not going to be sort of solved with one top-level meeting, as positive as that is. I'll give you a list of the small things, if you like: Huawei, Solomon Islands, Hong Kong, Marines in Darwin, Crown Casino, jailed writer Gladys Leo. There's a whole ton of, you know, daily irritants in the Australia-China relationship, on top of which is the big strategic issue. In other words, the US versus China and where Australia fits into that. So Australia's been in the doghouse for all manner of issues as far as China is concerned. The fact they have agreed to two substantive meetings recently, one in Bangkok yesterday, another in Indonesia about 2 weeks ago, is significant, but nobody should expect it to go back to the good old days.
I wonder with some of these issues whether they just go round and round in circles. It seems we always have some critique on their human rights policy. There's the ongoing discussion around security, and then it all seems to come back to the importance of the economic relationship. Do we just go round and round in circles? Or do you feel like the state of the relationship really is in a much darker place at the moment, say, compared to 5 or 10 years ago?
Yes, I do think that. I think the government thinks that, or at least the government's advisors do. We had the head of the Foreign Affairs and Trade Department recently, Francis Adamson of the Senate Estimates Committee, talking about a new normal where our differences are to the fore, if you like, and in some respects are set. It would be great for Australia if the relationship just came back around to the economic relationship with China, with a few minor political irritants, because the economic relationship is basically great. But I don't think that's going to be the case as China becomes more powerful and more assertive.
Well, Scott Morrison's message was, look, we have different values, but we can still do business, right? Do you think he's being a little bit hopeful there?
Well, I think he's saying what he should try to say. I think it is true that if we can re-establish a top-level dialogue with China at the top leader-to-leader level, which we really haven't had properly for at least 3 years, then a lot of the sorts of irritants that you talk about, big and small, can be handled. If there's no guidance at the top, then they dominate the relationship. I also think, as somebody who's got a keen appreciation of the value of the economic relationship, I mean, Australia's budget surplus is made in China, largely through iron ore prices and net exports. He's very keen to stop the poor political relationship infecting and dragging down the economic relationship. So he's trying to, you know, thread the needle. Everybody's going to have to do the same thing in the best way that he can.
Well, if you look at the dynamic between, I guess, human rights and security versus our economic relationship, how much damage have our comments about, say, you know, human rights in Xinjiang, or our comments about what's going on in the South China Sea, or the Huawei situation, have they actually negatively impacted on our business relationship?
There's been no major impact. And I think for a number of reasons, one of which that, you know, it costs China as well if they're to take economic sanctions against us. We have had some issues with thermal or power coal imports into China being slowed down. We have got an issue with barley, which the Chinese are using to retaliate against us. But, you know, overall, the bilateral trade relationship continues to grow at a great pace and has done so right through the political problems, but that doesn't mean over time that China will try to diversify away from Australia and, for that matter, the US and Canada, but they're just not doing it overnight.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about the relatively minor, if any, economic impact of raising these bigger issues, it does sound like Australia's getting what we want, which is to speak up on these issues that matter to us, but still do business.
Well, that would be the ideal world. I'm just saying we should be prepared for the fact that that might not last. Mm. And then we'll see how keen we are to speak up. I mean, I would hope that we continue to do so, but sooner or later there may be, you know, a genuine economic or, you know, business price to pay for that. And we should be prepared for that.
All right, let's talk about the big trade deal that's been discussed at these summits. It's called the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. It's been in the works for many years. If it comes off, how would it compare to the TPP?
Well, that's a very big and complicated question. I think the point why it's the RCEP, it's easier to sound, but it still doesn't roll off the tongue, you know, is that it involves India. And of course, that's one reason why it's been held up for so long, because India is not a very open economy compared to China. And of course, the Indians feel they're a much weaker economy compared to China and don't want to have, you know, open slather, if you like, because they feel that the Chinese manufacturing sector is so much bigger than theirs and will kind of gobble them up or wipe them out. But it's, you know, this is part of a sort of a network or matrix of trade agreements. Australia has a bunch of bilateral trade agreements, free trade agreements, so-called, with China, with Indonesia, and the like. We've got TPP, which I think is very big, and now we've got RCEP as well, which brings India in at the same time. I think the main significance of it is that both the TPP and RCEP don't include the US, which is the world's biggest economy. So it's a sort of increasing marginalization, potentially, of the role that the US plays in the Indo-Pacific.
Yeah, and that's the reason I actually compared it to the TPP. I wondered if the RCEP or RCEP, as you're calling it, actually goes ahead, whether that will position China more strongly in global trade and maybe draw the US back to the table on the TPP.
Well, it won't draw the US back to the table, I'm afraid, until as long as Mr. Trump's in office. I don't think anybody expects there to be any change in that respect. I think it will position China more strongly because China will be engaged with the region much more directly and much more robustly than the US is. The China, of course, is already the dominant trading partner of just about every country in the region already, and this would simply cement that. And then, of course, there's the incentives for investment as well for Chinese companies in the region as opposed to, you know, US or European companies in the region. We shouldn't forget Japan, which is a very, very strong player in all of this, but it certainly would help, you know, cement China's centrality, if you like, in the regional economies.
How will we benefit from the RCEP if it happens?
Well, you know, if you believe in free trade or freer and open trade, we are going to get, you know, better access to all of, we already get, you know, a lot of access by virtue of our bilateral economies, but this is bigger and this brings down barriers incrementally across many countries and also helps with India as well. You know, people who want us to diversify Australian trade away from China a little bit to reduce our, what they would regard as our reliance on China, see India as the big potential market for Australia. So anything that helps bring India into a more, you know, to open the Indian economy, traditionally very protectionist, has got to be a good thing for Australia.
What will it take to bring India to the table on this deal?
Well, the Indians are notorious in global trade organisations for, you know, not coming to the table, for demanding a whole bunch of concessions at the last minute and even then saying no, which apparently might happen this time. You know, but India once was about the same size as the Chinese economy are now. I think it's about a quarter of the size. On top of that, the Chinese manufacturing sector you know, is you know, three times as much the Chinese economy as it is in the Indian economy. So the Indian Chinese manufacturing sector is about, you know, 10, 11 times as big as India's. So India needs reassurance. You know, Mr. Modi, the Indian leader, has a big, you know, he wants to go ahead with this, but he's under incredible domestic pressure not to do that. And so I can't see India making a big deal in the next day or two.
All right, Richard, finally, the APEC summit traditionally follows the ASEAN summit, and it's been cancelled by Chile because of the anti-government protests there. Is that a big setback for the international community?
I don't think it's a big setback. I mean, it's an important forum more than anything else for, you know, bilateral meetings between all manner of leaders, possibly between Scott Morrison and Xi Jinping. It's a big setback for Chile. Is it a big setback in the broader scheme of things? I don't think so.
All right, Richard, thanks so much for weaving all that together for us.
Thank you.
That's Professor Richard McGregor, who's a senior fellow with the Lowy Institute.